The World Tomorrow. Garner Ted Armstrong brings you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. Almost everywhere you go, people complain criminals arrested one day are back on the street the very next day, committing new crimes before they can even be tried for their past crimes. People, more and more, are becoming outraged about the criminal justice system in the United States that is being called a revolving door justice. There's a new word now in our vocabulary, recidivism. That means recycling of criminals. Did you hear about the South, especially in Georgia not long ago? In the year of 1975, there was a great deal of furor over ex-convicts returning to crime, over wholesale prison releases, over the joblessness and ex-cons being put out of prison because they had to move over to make room for all the new ones coming in. You see, it was inhumane. Criminals shouldn't live in crowded conditions. It's probably bad for them. It may make them into a criminal or something. And so to make room for the crowded prisons in a growing backlog of convicts, the state of Georgia during 1975 began a new idea that's discharging inmates early. Almost no one but the convicts seemed to really like that idea, but that's what they did. The Atlanta police commissioner said he had mixed emotions about the plan, but he was particularly concerned that many of the hundreds of released convicts might return to crime if they were unable to find jobs. And how about that? They were letting them out into a time of very great joblessness, a time of recession in business. When prisons got so crowded they started sending the inmates home to make room for more, it pointed up a common situation all around the United States. That is, we just can't build jails fast enough. Prisons are so jammed with convicts that in one case at least, a federal judge had recently ordered a freeze on prison admissions until the inmate population was reduced to designed capacity. Now, you know, in the Arab nations or in Spain or some of the countries of Europe, Asia and Africa, they don't worry about design capacity. They just throw them in there, and that's the end of it. But we're humane in the United States, and we are especially humane when it comes to all of the weeping sob sisters, the slavering, sobbing, hand-wringing, hair-pulling, chest-beating people who point up about the inhumanity, the inhuman, cruel, and unusual punishment inflicted upon these poor, misunderstood people when all the world they did was to beat an old, elderly, 84-year-old woman to death with a brick. All they did was to rape, rob, and then kill a little old lady when they were out on parole for a whole series of other crimes. And they're misunderstood, and they're underprivileged, and we've got to help these kids. As I said last time, I think maybe one of the criteria for the election of public officials, state legislatures, and members of Congress would be that they would be required to come from a family which had either been victimized by a brutal rape, a murder, robbery, or arson, some real violent crime against person and property, or had been a victim themselves. You know, recently I was encouraged a little bit because I found that there was a case from Boston, Massachusetts, where a state representative was robbed at gunpoint, and he was a liberal. He had voted for the prison furlough bill. That's the bill that lets people out of jail to go home to wife and kiddies so they can commit maybe another crime while they're there, whatever. But he'd voted for the prison furlough bill. But now he was in the state house parking lot, and he was robbed at gunpoint. Representative Richard E. Landry, Democrat, said he was approached by a man at about 10 p.m. as he tried to get into his own car after a day's work. The man pointed a gun at Landry and demanded his money. "I did what he said," said Landry. About $40 was taken, but the police couldn't find any suspects. And then Landry went on to report that his car was stolen from the Capitol parking lot 2 weeks ago. He said, "I voted for the prison furlough bill, but to tell you the truth, it's getting harder and harder for me to remain a liberal." Oh, I like that. Now, instead of just getting harder and harder for him to remain a liberal, why doesn't he just change and quit voting for such things and decide that the only way we're going to cure the problem of crime is to exact swift, sure, and consistent punishment which is exactly tailored to suit the crime? You know, there's an elderly lady in the Los Angeles, or in this case, I believe the Oakland Bay Area, who has been robbed so many times she really can't recall the actual number. But in a recent case, it was about the second time in less than a year and a half that this 85-year-old widow, who only weighs 100 pounds, lives alone in a two-story home on an obscure street somewhere in Oakland. And this time, the intruder entered the residence, demanded money, and then beat this poor lady around the head, chest, and legs with a brick. She's 85, weighs 100 pounds, and she was sent to the hospital under intensive care. A neighbor, 84 years of age, Esther Locke, who lives about a block away, weighed 98 pounds. She wasn't quite that fortunate. A little over a year ago, she'd been robbed, raped, and then beaten to death in the living room of her little two-room bungalow. She lived alone. So the police took a young man into custody for the assault on Mrs. Ortiz, and so then it came out that this young man, who was named James Stephen Greeley, age 18, was the same James Greeley who had been sent to county boys' camp for the murder of Mrs. Locke. But Greeley, it turned out, had been on furlough from the boys' camp. Now, you see, as long as you've got representatives like Richard E. Landry, and apparently he's going to change his mind, that's good, I hail that, that's great, that's good progress, who vote for these furlough bills, then you're going to have young guys like James Greeley out of the camp where they have been convicted for a murder, a rape, and a robbery, but the best way to rehabilitate them is to put them back out in the streets again. So he's back out in the streets. And he wandered down to within less than a block of the scene of that other vicious crime and beat another old lady with a brick and hospitalized her under intensive care. Now, fortunately, a few people are beginning to become upset by all this filth and are beginning to demand something. But, you know, it isn't enough to sit around and to carp at the judges, the criminal justice system, or the police departments, or lax laws. The people who put those laws on the books are the elected representatives and officials of state and federal government. And as long as you've got people who are going to vote for all of these various parole systems and furlough systems and methods of watering down these sentences or allowing sentences to run simultaneously where you've got brutal crimes such as rape, arson, robbery, mugging, murder, you convict a guy with a rap sheet 25 inches long with a history of crime since he was 8, and he's now 17, he's stolen 40 automobiles, 2 bicycles, raped 3 women, killed 2 people, and that's becoming commonplace. And he's out on furlough. He's being rehabilitated. You know, he let him go home for Thanksgiving. Unbelievable. But you got people who will vote for that kind of a bill. Now, nobody wants to be an alarmist. They don't want to say there's any kind of a crisis. Crime wasn't really even a great big political issue in the last national elections. But it should have been. And according to the people who live in the streets of San Francisco, Los Angeles, Detroit, Houston, Dallas, and especially the capital city of Washington, D.C., we have now come into a crisis with crime, which it is a gigantic cancer gnawing away at the very underpinnings of society itself. Our elderly in the United States of America, many of these people, the very backbone of the American labor force in the 20s and 30s and on into the 40s, are now many hundreds of thousands and perhaps millions of them relegated to the backwaters of society, to where they must live alone, oftentimes widowed or widowers, elderly couples living in trailer houses, cheap little walk-up flats and apartment houses. They live alone, unprotected, and these young thugs, and it's now been determined that a tremendous number of them are 12, 13, 14 years of age. Sometimes, depending upon which city you're talking about, whether the South Bronx, as I related in the last program, certain portions of Los Angeles and others, they come from ethnic minorities, where homes, family life, are virtually non-existent, where a strong father figure is not present, where the homes are upside down and backward, broken by desertion, by divorce, or where there was no father in a legal sense of the word in the first place, where the kids grow up virtually on the streets, unattended, undisciplined, not knowing either discipline or love. And so the kids, for lack of something better to do, are going to react to all of the external stimuli poked at them from the time they're a little kid through the one-eyed monster we call television, where they can see a daily outpouring of grisly brutality, all the way from the comics, where people are disintegrated, blown out of cannons, run over by various machinery, and then are leaping around, dancing with their full uniform of bunny rabbit clothes on the next scene. Or the so-called family shows, the cops and robber shows, the cowboy and Indian shows, the brutality shows, the Satanism, demonism, and witchcraft shows. And most of these kids, as has been said by the head of the FCC, have witnessed more television by the time they enter the first grade in school than they will ever spend in formal classroom training in their entire lives. Now, cause and effect, of course, is not obvious, is it? Kids without a strong family structure, without a father and a mother who love each other, who have a strong relationship, who have clear, defined family roles where dad is the breadwinner and the head of the family exactly as he ought to be. Kids who are denied this, who do not know love and warmth and affection, protection, and the home as a sanctuary, a place to go for not only love but training and discipline, are not going to grow up knowing any real sympathy whatsoever for the rights and the property of other human beings. They grow up almost, well, really, I was going to say almost, no, not almost like animals, somewhat less than animals. Most animals aren't like some of these vicious teenagers beating elderly 84-year-old widows to death with a brick. Animals really don't act that way. Even a lion preying on a herd of wildebeest somewhere in Africa is following the natural impulses of eating and is not killing just to be vicious or brutal, though you might not agree with that statement. He is a creature of instinct, and his instinct, when he is hungry, says go out and kill in that herd. There is no instinct here at work with some of these young criminals, but merely an almost sub-animal behavior, which knows no pity, no empathy for the suffering of a fellow human being. And in many cases, a human being who has spent her life in rearing a family who is probably a great-grandmother, and because of the abandonment of these elderly people by society, and oftentimes by their own families themselves, are the victims upon which these young, brutal thugs prey. It makes you sick. We're in a crisis. We're deserting these old people. We force them to live in the midst of an absolute lion's den. They're thrown to the wolves, and no one seems to really care. And still, the inattentive, apathetic, dull, lethargic American people going along the freeways, never deviating from their tracks, their ruts into which they've gotten themselves, so they're not out there where they can hear the screams, the shrieks of the victims. They don't see the rotten, filthy, decrepit parts of the ghettos of the big cities where crime is so high that it's, well, they don't even think more than about 15 or 20% of it's even reported, as far as that's concerned, if you include all acts of shoplifting, vandalism, and petty thievery and assault. And so the average person living his life in his own rut is not really aware until he is made aware via television reports and documentaries, newspaper and magazine articles, and even then a lot of people don't want to read it because they're jaded by all that type of thing. They say, let me alone, let me live in my vicarious situation, let me watch my exciting cops and robbers programs on television, but don't tell me about the reality of what happened downtown yesterday. That's too bloody. That's real. That was someone lying there bleeding out his life's blood because a sniper killed him on the streets of San Francisco. But don't bother me with that. It's time to watch Gunsmoke. So people don't mind wallowing in it as long as it's their fantasies, their voyeuristic impulses being appealed to. But when it's real, they don't want to hear about it. That's bad news. Well, that attack on that elderly lady up in the Oakland Bay Area was at last beginning to infuriate an awful lot of people. But you know, among other things that infuriated people was that murder of a 5-year-old boy, the son of a deputy state attorney general, by a 17-year-old youth who had been given a weekend pass from juvenile hall, and evidence placed before the grand jury showed that kid had already committed 9 prior known sex molestations for which he was not charged and he was not placed on probation. He was just given a weekend pass, like he was a bright young kid in the Navy or something. Go home, get a weekend pass. So he went out and killed a 5-year-old boy. I wonder what the parents feel. Sweet little 5-year-old boy. Be going to school next year. probably already in kindergarten. Maybe he had a sister or two. 5 years they went through the problem of feeding and clothing and training that kid. Kissing him to bed, waking him up in the morning, a five-year-old boy. And he's just one of the tens of thousands of 3 and 5 and 7 year old children playing with their lack of awareness, lack of knowledge of what lurks out there in the streets for them. And the stupid, idiotic legislators who put those stupid, idiotic laws on the books that allow youngsters with a known record of 9 sex molestations go out for a weekend and prey on yet additional people. And as long as we're in the situation where we've got these slobbing, quavering, sobbing, sob sisters and do-gooders who think that putting criminals guilty of murder to death is cruel and inhuman, but they don't think it is cruel and inhuman what they do to these other people. Was it cruel and inhuman, this rotten little pug that took a two-pronged meat fork and kept jabbing it in the arm of an elderly lady in a fourth-story walk-up Bronx apartment, all the way up her arm over and over again until he got closer and closer to her eyes. And it was then she broke down and told the vicious little rotten, filthy punk where her $200 were hidden. She and her husband couldn't stand it. You see, he'd had his brain beaten so badly against a concrete doorpost only a year and a half previously in another mugging and robbery that he couldn't quite think straight, but that elderly couple with $23,000 in the bank probably could have moved someplace, go to some little tiny town. I don't know, would they be safe there? Probably not, but they were now afraid to go out of their apartment for milk and bread and cheese and the stuff to stay alive with, and so they just made a mutual suicide pact, and they put themselves to death in their apartment out of fear. That's what some people have to live with. Now, there are groups, gangs, around in our big cities today. They call themselves by various names, usually after animals, like one group called a wolf pack in the Bay Area. And authorities claim that members of that wolf pack gang have founded another gang, a 16-member gang, that specializes in extortion of the elderly. They go around and they offer these elderly people protection. You won't get beaten up, stabbed, kicked, or hit with a brick, raped, or robbed if you pay off. You know, these vicious little rotten thugs, some of them 11, 12, and 13 years of age, establish the living habits and patterns of elderly people. They even know when their welfare check is due. They know when it's time for them to leave their apartments and walk down to get their welfare check. And they wait until they've cashed it and catch them coming home. It's done regularly. And so our streets are becoming places of fear. And of course, people are usually not willing to do anything about it. Now we're having this character Gilmore in Criminal saying, "Give me liberty or give me death." I don't know whether that poor motel clerk he shot to death had a chance to get out a real highfalutin sounding statement like that or not before he died. I don't think he would have said that anyway, because all he was doing was just working at his job when that criminal walked in there and killed him. But, you know, here's a guy who, apparently, according to what a close friend said, didn't really feel they would do it to him anyway. He probably figured it if he could threaten them with this braggadocio, with a bravado, saying, "Go ahead, kill me, I dare you." He knew that the slobbering sob sisters somehow, some way, would mount some kind of a campaign to get some stay of execution, and probably they would never kill the man. Here's a convicted murderer who says he wants to die, and the laws won't let him. I know there's an explanation there somewhere, but somehow it just escapes me. Well, as long as we're going to continue to put legislators in positions of power and authority who can vote these laws on the books, as long as we have kickbacks from the state to the county of so many $1,000 per head for a criminal, if they will put him into a parole situation where he just has to visit a parole officer every week or so, and leave him back out on the streets just because he stole 5 or 6 bicycles, a couple of automobiles, burglarized 4 or 5 homes, raped one kid, got involved in a lot of street fights, maybe knifed somebody, maybe was participant in a gangland killing where he was acquitted for lack of evidence, just because he's got a rap sheet longer than your arm, just because he's been arrested more than 25 times, that's no reason to put this rotten little 17-year-old thug behind bars, is it? Those places are overcrowded. They're drafty. He could catch a cold in there. Why, he can't move around freely. I mean, there's just not room for all those guys to live together in those crowded jail cells. Leave that kid on the street. So the little 84-year-old widows can continue to live in fear. You know, there are some cops that have just about had it. An article came out in 1975 talking about a Los Angeles police lieutenant who became very angry and frustrated because he said, what we're doing is recycling criminals. We deal with about 15,000 gang members and associates, but in terms of the perpetrators and the real leaders, he said, we're talking about 160 people and we can't get them off the streets. We arrest them again and again, and they're convicted again and again, and nothing happens to them. They all get out on probation. Nobody goes to jail. And he cited statistics. He wasn't just kidding about it. He said 70% of all convicted felons in the state of California in 1974 got probationary sentences. 70 out of 100. Again, it would probably bore you for me to tell you the actual amount of crime that is reported. Of that reported, how much is actually stopped by apprehension? Of those arrested, how many actually ever go to court? Of those who go to court, to trial, the percentage convicted? But I can tell you at the other end of the spectrum that of those convicted, 70% got probation and didn't go to jail. 23% of those convicted of homicide were already on parole or probation for other serious crimes. 40% of those convicted for burglary were already on probation for earlier burglaries. So young people today are basically being educated by the juvenile justice system that crime works, crime pays. You can get away with it. If the police pick up a burglar and he's back on the streets 20 minutes later, and then it takes 3 months, he commits the crime, let's say, in December, and by the last of April or early May, after being out, all this time, he was only in jail for 20 minutes, long enough for a quick snapshot and fingerprinting job, back in the streets. Then by early May, his case goes to court. Isn't that lovely? What a system. And then, nothing happens. He's not convicted. Or if he is convicted, he's put on probation. You think that teaches these people anything? What kind of a lesson does a person learn with that type of treatment? Maybe he's a member of a teenage gang. Why, the whole gang talks about how old so-and-so was arrested. They only kept him 20 minutes. They'd joke and laugh and tip up the beer, maybe horn a little H or something, get a big high on, and just laugh with glee about how the cops can't do a stupid thing to them. No penalties are attached. One juvenile said to this policeman, you can't do anything to me. I'm just a kid. I'll be out in 6 months anyway. And the policeman said he was right. One gang member, the officer maintains, had been arrested and convicted, listen to this, 65 times on charges of burglary, theft, curfew violation, grand theft, robbery, joyriding in stolen automobiles, disturbing the peace, possession of marijuana, carrying a concealed weapon, and at the time the officer was talking about this character, arrested 65 times, the kid was still out on the street. His arrest record read like this. He was arrested almost every month for 6 years. And his heaviest time was 10 days. How about that? Another one was arrested and convicted 27 times for everything from burglary to rape with assault to commit murder to train wrecking. And his time served was about the same, almost none at all. And these things, according to the police officers in our big cities, are not unusual. They are the rule, not the exception. Now, there are unbelievable statistics. I don't want to bore you with that. I'm saying the human element of this is that if I could ask for a showing of hands of this radio audience, hundreds of thousands, perhaps even a few million people, it would shock the socks off of you to see how many people's personal lives have been touched by crime. If you could see, as we intend doing on the television program, as we can, the people sitting in wheelchairs, paralyzed for life because of a brutal attack by a thug with a gun, with withered members, shattered faces, and ruined lives. If you could see the people in mental institutions whose minds have snapped because of the brutalization and the torture that was forced upon them by some young thug of one of these gangs or something, maybe some of the slobbering sob sisters would quit quavering about the rights of the criminals and begin to have at least a little bit of pity for some of their victims. That'll be the day, won't it? But I'm seeing a little hopeful sign. Even though I told you about the brutal murder of this elderly lady up in her middle 80s by a character that was out on probation, I'm also able to report that at least one legislator, who is a liberal, says that because he was robbed at gunpoint in the state capitol building parking lot and later had his automobile stolen, it's getting harder and harder for him to remain a liberal. Wouldn't it be great if one of the primary criteria for the election to public office in anyone that is going to have anything whatsoever to do with the criminal justice system and with legislation having to do with the punishment for crime were himself required to be a victim or a close family member of a victim of a brutal crime? You know, I think that would actually change things. Well, you ought to write for this booklet I want to tell you about because there's a great deal here. This booklet, by the way, has received very, very wide acceptance in police departments around the world as well as across the country. It has been, from time to time, promoted by those departments. We have sent mass mailings when we have been requested by educational institutions, by police departments, by law enforcement agencies at every part of the spectrum. And this booklet is Crime Can Be Stopped, Here's How. And it shows you in step-by-step detail the curse of crime, how it actually was prophesied, even in the Bible, how it does pay, the crime increase from 1973. The graphs and the charts are here. One man's power, how that can be exploited, the loners that prey on elderly people, Britain's crime explosion, crime in Europe, crime around the world. What are the causes of crime? What really does underlie the entire thing? It gives you a summary of 10 surefire ways to produce a criminal in your own home. For example, number one, begin in infancy to give your kid everything he wants, and that way he'll grow up to believe the world owes him a living. Number two, never give him religious or spiritual training. Wait until he's 21, then he can decide on the church of his choice. Number three, don't ever tell him he's wrong or bad or that something he's doing is illegal because he might develop a guilt complex. Instead, tell him it's society that's at fault. His teacher is guilty. It's the other kids and bad companions that did it. Four, pick up everything he leaves around, toys, books, clothes, everything. Do everything for him, and then that way he can expect the world will do everything for him later. And let him read any printed matter he finds or speak any word he hears and laugh at him, because some of them, even though they blow the top of your mind, are pretty cute after all, aren't they? Sterilize the silverware, of course. Wash the carrots. Make sure the food is cooked. But don't worry about what his mind gets, because that can just be pure garbage. Of course, as parents, you ought to quarrel frequently in his presence, and that way he'll see the breakup of a family and thus be more likely to break up his own later on. These and other suggestions. And, of course, the cross-section of what criminals are all about, what they look like. You'll find out that human nature itself is pretty violent in reading this booklet and the cure for crime. Write for this booklet. It's absolutely free. Better yet, pick up the telephone, dial a toll-free number right now, 800-423-4444. And while you're at it, request that booklet on the modern Romans, the decline of Western civilization. We are going the way of ancient Rome, and this booklet proves it. 800-423-4444. It's free of charge, no price, or you can write to me, Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California. Until next time, Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow with Garner Ted Armstrong, sponsored by the Worldwide Church of God. For literature offered on this program, send your requests along with the call letters of this station to Garner Ted Armstrong, Pasadena, California, 91123. Or you may dial this toll-free number, 800-423-4444.